Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Tie. This is Henry today bringing you an exciting episode with Chris Mello from Good Walk Coffee. Chris started Good Walk in 2019 to bring together his passions of coffee and golf, which makes him a perfect guest for The Tie. Good Walk is a really interesting company, and it was exciting to hear how Chris came up with the idea, how they've done so far, how they've continued to expand their operations, and some of the things that they're going to have going forth. Chris, like me, is super passionate about coffee, so a lot of good nuggets in there for you coffee enthusiasts on roasting methods, some different blends to try, some different roasters, some different countries that make amazing coffee, and a lot more. So really hope you all enjoy this episode. Be sure to use our code, THETIE, to get 20% off at Good Walk Coffee. And without any further ado, let's get to Chris. Chris Mello, welcome to The Tie. Really excited to have you here today. A perfect guest, I would say. Big coffee fan, obviously, and a golfer as well. So really excited to dig into both of those verticals. Welcome to the pod.
Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, I've been listening to a lot of the coffee talk, wishing I could join in as I was listening. So I'm glad I'm finally going to get to have a minute to speak myself.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. So let's start out with something just super simple. Who are you? You know, as a businessman, as a golfer, as a coffee lover, tell everyone a little bit about who you are and kind of how you've gotten to where you are.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the two kind of tracks, right? Golf and business. So I on the golf side, I grew up in Michigan. I was actually a competitive tennis player and nationally ranked junior when I was a kid. So tennis was kind of my competitive sport. Golf was always the outlet. But I was lucky enough to grow up at Oakland Hills, which, you know, is going through a little tough time right now with the fire that happened at the clubhouse. But was, you know, joined there right before the 1986 U.S. Open. And kind of my introduction to golf was these, you know, massive sort of events, you know, happening once in a while, but the rest of the time just having a really fun club to run around and spend all my days during the summer at. I grew up playing. I, you know, left for school, went into business. I started my career kind of just as the first internet boom was happening at the end of the 90s. So got into digital marketing at that point and worked for a company that did brand identity and corporate strategy or brand strategy. And, you know, I always thought that was really interesting because we were either helping to reinvent, you know, big Fortune 500 companies in their brand position or helping launch new startups. You know, worked with people like, you know, Audible back when they were, you know, you probably don't even remember, they actually started as like a hardware and a software company. We branded them, worked with everyone from, you know, American Express, Comcast, Valvoline, selling motor oil, all sorts of companies all over. But always really liked the idea of, you know, helping to craft kind of what a company's story is, what the brand story is. And always had it on the back of my mind that I'd like to do it for myself, but took probably about 20 years too long to actually, you know, make the leap and do it. I started kind of thinking about the idea of starting a coffee company probably about 7 years ago, although probably 5 years ago, like in earnest. I have lived in LA for a while now. And in the early 2000s, Los Angeles kind of became the epicenter for what's known as the third wave of coffee. And it was, you know, as you know, like Blue Bottle, Intelligentsia, like these kind of small artisan roasters that were, you know, growing really quickly. And, you know, both of those companies got acquired for, I think each were like close to $1 billion. So it was really interesting to me that the direction coffee was going was kind of around this, you know, smaller lot beans and higher quality beans and more artisan roasting, but there was still like massive business potential around the companies you could build. So, you know, I kind of just decided to apply, you know, what I did at agencies for my clients to myself and spent about a year looking at, you know, is there a market for sort of a specialty kind of niche, you know, passion brand in coffee. I was familiar and had been following a company called Black Rifle Coffee Company, which, you know, you may be aware of, and most people are that are into coffee. I'm still surprised at how many people haven't heard of them, considering they just went public on the New York Stock Exchange 2 weeks ago and are worth like $1.7 billion now. But, you know, I thought for them, it was like a really interesting story because they had this niche market around kind of veteran support and kind of Second Amendment right stuff and were able to make a sizable business out of it. So, you know, again, back to kind of the golf side, had been following, you know, really exciting things that had been happening with different brands that were popping up. You know, and I'll name a couple and probably forget a ton, but, you know, everyone from like Seamus, you know, just a lot of people that were kind of, you know, creating these new, really exciting brands that seem to sort of be acknowledging kind of some of the history and tradition of golf, but in a really modern way and more of kind of an updated brand way. So, my kind of, you know, research was immediately like, okay, well, if we did a coffee brand around, you know, my other great love, which is golf, like, is it big enough? Are there enough people to buy enough coffee to make it worthwhile and all of that? And kind of set forth to, you know, logo design and packaging design and then digging into kind of all the product of, you know, what kind of coffee do we want to offer, sort of where do we want to sit in kind of the, you know, the coffee world, because there's everything from like super specialty roasters to obviously like mass producers. And so, you know, went through kind of this whole methodical process of deciding what Good Walk Coffee would be and branding ourselves. And then in kind of the end of 2019, right around the holidays, launched kind of almost as a test. It was self-funded. So I was hoping that the test would work well, obviously, because it was all my own money. You know, immediately kind of started getting really, really good feedback from just organic outreach to golf media, to, you know, people in social. And, you know, we're able to see pretty quickly that we were going to be able to create some excitement around the company, and people were loving the product because we put a lot of effort into making sure that the coffee was great. And it just kind of took off from there.
That was very comprehensive. I feel like you answered all my questions already. So maybe we just go ahead and wrap up.
There you go. All right. Nice being on.
One of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, what specifically about the intersection of coffee and golf led you to believe that there's a market? But you really already answered that. So to go a layer deeper, you know, you talk about Black Rifle Coffee, you talk about things like Seamus Golf, very niche brands that are trying to hit on something very specific. You know, what sort of market research were you doing around companies like that that then led you to believe, hey, I could do something very specific like that, bringing into conversation both coffee and golf?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, again, going back to kind of the training as a brand strategist is, you know, there's a lot of emphasis over the last kind of period on storytelling and authenticity. And, you know, there are these, unfortunately, they're like buzzwords now, but they are very important. And for me, one of the things before I even got to kind of market size and addressable audience and all that sort of thing was, you know, is this going to be a believable story and something that, you know, is going to feel authentic? Because, you know, I really didn't, you know, you see in golf a lot of little like tchotchke products and, you know, things that are, you know, they're just like gadgets and, they're not authentic. And it almost seems like people just have seen somewhere that the average income of golfers is high. So it's like, let's just try and sell them a bunch of crap. I never wanted it to be seen as, anything other than, you know, great coffee that happened to be, you know, celebrating our equally strong passion for golf. So, you know, I sort of thought back and, you know, I grew up actually, I learned golf in from my grandfather. He lived in a town called Franklin, North Carolina, that you might have been to. It's up in the mountains outside of Asheville. He lived across the street from this little 9-hole municipal course. And we would get up in the morning when I was probably like 5 or 6. And, you know, he and I would be the only ones up. He had a garage full of old clubs and he cut down a few for me. And we'd go walk across the street to the course. And he'd always have his styrofoam cup of probably really crappy coffee that was made, you know, down at the starter shack. But, you know, as far as kind of like authentic stories, like I knew that I had this kind of, you know, resonance around sort of these soulful moments of, you know, whether it's like, you know, first light in the morning or even kind of like afternoon, just sort of walks, you know, with my grandfather and with my dad, you know. So coffee and golf kind of intersected in some of these stories first. But then obviously, you know, again, the question is like, am I the only one who's, you know, sort of has this, you know, this history and this background? So we, you know, applied my kind of brand planning hat, and we've got access to different research tools. And so you look at things like, you know, there's 24 million golfers in the US, about 64% of the US drinks coffee every day, and it averages about 3 cups. I think I bump up that average quite a bit just single-handedly, but
Doing some good work there as well, for sure.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. But you know, it's things like that. You start looking at, you're like, okay, well, you know, the, you know, if there's these numbers and you know, then there's kind of, it can support as a business if we get this percentage of market. And you know, one of the things I thought was interesting about coffee too, and I love what I found about kind of, you know, the where our company sits in the golf industry and in the coffee industry is, you know, no one really right now is trying to do what we're doing. So, you know, whether you're talking to, you know, other big brands or other resorts or, you know, we're not competing with anybody. So there's a lot of people that want to collaborate with us. So we've had a lot of, you know, really great success and fun projects, like collaborating with other brands. You know, and then the other thing is that I liked, because I, you know, I'm a very competitive person, but I also, you know, don't necessarily want to come out just like this killer instinct of I want to boot everybody else out of the kitchen cabinet and be the only coffee anyone drinks. I know realistically, when we look at research, you know, most regular coffee drinkers rotate through about 3 or 4 different coffee brands. And then when you start talking about people that are into kind of specialty roasters, it's even higher than that. So I like the fact that we can coexist and have a lot of these like cooperative collaborations with other people as well. So I don't know if I answered the original question very well, but
when I was totally thinking, that makes a lot of sense. And it's really cool to think about how the coffee, you know, the niche coffee industry and the niche golf industry are pretty separated. I would say, like, say you walk into a third wave coffee shop in LA, it's probably not frequented by necessarily a ton of golfers. Similarly, if you walk into the pro shop at LACC, it's probably not a ton of third wave coffee drinkers necessarily. You know, you kind of have two disparate groups there. However, there is kind of a Venn diagram where you find some people in the middle, and it creates for a super interesting market. And so it's fascinating The way that you came to that and found that there are some people that you can address with it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's great over just for anyone who drinks coffee is that the, you know, the third wave high-end roasters are really elevating all coffee quality and the expectations of everyone, even someone who might be just buying, like, you know, being Starbucks beans or even like Dunkin' Donuts or something to make at home. Though, you know, a lot of those people are still going out to cafes and they're still experiencing maybe like pour over coffees and, you know, at restaurants. So what we found is, you know, we do have, we kind of break our product line into a couple levels. You know, we have, you know, Ethiopian, you know, washed beans, we've got Costa Rican beans. You know, we do want to all kind of be able to offer sort of a higher end, more limited, maybe availability type of coffee for, you know, the real sort of coffee snobs and people that are going to want to try something different all the time. But our base coffees, really, the goal was just to have a quality, still specialty grade coffee that's an everyday drinker. Because what we keep hearing over and over, especially in a lot of clubs that we visit, are, you know, you imagine kind of a visitor to somewhere like Pinehurst Resort or a member at a private club. A lot of times the kind of legacy coffee provider for those places is really low quality coffee. So, you know, but those people aren't walking into those places expecting their coffee to be bad. They still want the same, you know, really good, solid quality of coffee that they experience at home or out when they're eating at other places. So, you know, I do think it's interesting that it seems like everyone's expectation is just being elevated as, you know, coffee quality overall, is being pushed up by specialty roasters, which is great.
That's a great segue into something that I wanted to discuss. When you started with this project, was that part of the thesis that you wanted to expand into clubs and try to elevate their overall coffee experience by having Good Walk as their purveyor? And then also obviously partner with places like Pinehurst Resort and larger places where you can really tick off, you know, a lot of places at once. Was that part of the original thesis of you being the go-to person for a lot of clubs?
It wasn't originally. I think right out of the gates, it was direct to consumer. Coffee is a great product for subscription because typically you know pretty much how much you go through each month. So it's pretty easy to set up like, you know, we're a 2-bag-a-month household or we're a bag a week household. So when we launched, I thought, you know, the vast majority of the opportunity would be around the direct to consumer side of the business with kind of a little bit of support, maybe like greengrass accounts, like selling some product through pro shops, maybe even like seasonally, like, you know, originally we did kind of a lot of work right out of the gates with clubs that wanted to offer coffees around Christmas and holidays, but just because people are shopping for a lot of other things, you know, in their shops as gifts. We launched whatever it was, 4 months, 5 months before COVID hit. So once COVID hit, it was interesting because, you know, our direct to consumer side definitely took off faster than we thought because, you know, everyone's stuck at home, offices are closed, Starbucks itself was closed for, you know, a number of weeks. So the whole coffee industry saw a huge shift to online buying, which helped us. But it was also interesting because once places started reopening, we had become friends with a couple resorts. I mean, one specifically, I got to know the owner and ownership and management team over at Mid Pines and Pine Needles really well. And just through talking to them and to some other properties, we started hearing about challenges they were having reopening after COVID. And one of which was like, you know, they had to get rid of all of their lobby coffee, like any kind of shared carafe or, you know, anything that multiple people would touch had to be pulled. And so the first kind of pivot for us sales channel wise was actually to be able to offer in-room coffee. So we have our coffee in Keurig cups and pods. And through one of our manufacturers, actually were able to source single use Keurig machines that are really economical and go in and be able to, you know, with like Pine Needles, Mid Pines, go in with a couple hundred rooms and say, okay, here's, you know, 250 machines, put them in all the rooms, they're logoed, and then, you know, purchase the pods. And that way they were able to have something that was really easy to sanitize, to keep clean, and sort of solve the business challenge for them. And that was kind of the beginning of really seeing resorts and clubs as a bigger opportunity. You know, one of the challenges is some of the legacy companies that are in big commercial properties like that provide all of the brewers as a part of kind of a contract. And unfortunately, what happens is properties get locked into these like 3-year deals where they have free equipment, like, you know, tens of thousands of dollars of equipment given to them, or at least let them borrow. But in the coffee that they get provided for those 3 years, it's just absolute crap. We started looking at, you know, we're small, we're a startup. We don't have a ton of capital to just come in and start competing with big national, providers like that. So kind of had to find opportunities where there's clubs that are, you know, that are not in that kind of an arrangement or own their own equipment. We can provide the coffee separately. We actually, at the end of last year, finally got some different partners to come on board so that we can provide equipment as well in sort of a similar model. So it was challenging, but it kind of all arise just from like, you know, how do we help our customers or potential customers, you know, do their job better and easier and you know, kind of help them solve their challenges as well.
Is there anything that you've noticed with more so your subscription business among what type, what outlet people are using to order your coffee, be it K-Pods versus ground versus whole bean, and how that allows them or doesn't allow them to latch on? Like, do you see better retention through K-Pods versus other sorts of outlets?
That's a really good question. I don't know that that we see any discernible difference in retention of subscriptions, you know, whether it's whole bean, ground, or pods. You know, there's definitely, you know, and this might come as no surprise. It's like, you know, anyone, you know, I have a trade subscription at home as well. I love trying as many different coffee roasters as I can. So I get this, but what we see is some of the people that come in and are really looking at, you know, they might start a subscription with Ethiopian, switch to Costa Rican or one of our other specialty higher end coffees. They have a slightly shorter kind of lifetime span, or they might kind of subscribe for a bit, then unsubscribe, then resubscribe, versus someone who's coming in at like our Colombia coffee or our Brazilian blend that are a little bit more the everyday drinkers. Those are by far the longest, the best retention, the kind of highest lifetime value. So I think it probably comes down to, rather than format, a little bit more of like, you know, just how, you know, how much do you like to kind of switch your coffee up?
Yeah. That's, you know, as you talk about coffee from around the world, it's making me think, whether it be for Good Walk specifically or earlier in life, have you ever done any international or national, whatever sort of travel for coffee specifically?
I personally haven't. So that was, we had trips that were planned when COVID hit to go visit some of the farms that we source from. I'm hoping that changes very soon, because most of these places are not too shabby to go and visit. But we actually have, so, you know, I'm a huge coffee enthusiast. I'm by no means like a Q grader or, you know, certified Q grader. But our Q graders and our green bean buyers are all very well traveled. So, you know, COVID put a big damper on a lot of those visits. It used to happen 3 or 4 times a year, just to go and, you know, kind of, do sample roasts of different harvests and things. And, it'll be interesting to see how, you know, if as much of that comes back as prior, because I think a lot of people got used to doing things remotely. You know, we can still see one of the things I really love about coffee is, you know, it used to be not a very transparent process. So you'd have to have personal relationships with farmers and kind of brokers. And even before COVID, technology changed a lot of that. I mean, there's so much transparency and visibility into, you know, who has good harvests, you know, how, like what pricing is sitting at. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how much of those kind of, how much of that travel comes back as a necessity versus just more like keeping up with relationships and wanting to go spend some time in a beautiful country.
So as you've thought through those trips over the years, and I imagine you will piece some of those together eventually, is golf a part of that? Do you think of courses you can play or just outlets to get some golf in around the coffee travels?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I should say one of the kind of seeds of this idea, or when I was kind of mulling it over, it wasn't the first time I had the idea, but I was, had actually snuck out to play, Mauna Kea on Hawaii, by myself. And, you know, we just visited one of the coffee farms the day before. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there are some interesting things we actually looked at, potentially doing kind of a video project, like a documentary about some of the farms we work with in Honduras, in Guatemala, because there's actually a nice David Kidd course and maybe a Tom Doak course down on the coast down there. But it's, you know, it's definitely something that we've tried to tie in. I bring my golf clubs with me anywhere, so you know, might as well try and use them.
Let's spin the question the other way. When you travel for golf, what does the coffee routine then look like? Do you just sell out to Starbucks, or do you take your own stuff, or do you like to try the local sort of roasters and different things?
Yeah, no, I'm proud to say I haven't stepped foot in a Starbucks in years now.
Good man.
I absolutely cannot stand. Well, I shouldn't say that. I went to the Starbucks. What's their reserve roastery in Seattle last year, just to kind of see if they were roasting things any lighter and weren't burning the heck out of everything. But turns out they still burned all the beans, even in the reserve roastery, unfortunately. But yeah, no, I tell everyone, I'm like, you know, that's not what coffee's supposed to taste like. It's not supposed to taste like an ashtray. You know, and the reason why a lot of those really high volume roasters tend to over roast everything is because they, you know, they've grown so quickly and they have such a huge green bean requirement that the quality of the green beans is low. And so it's like cooking steak. If you have a really bad piece of steak, then cook it well done, right? But if you have a really good piece of steak or if you have really great green beans, you want that flavor to come through. So no, I don't go to Starbucks. I've got a little travel setup, a Hario hand grinder, little kettle, and my AeroPress that I'll bring with me. And then I always schedule at least, a few visits to local roasters and cafes, and I'll always try out whatever is kind of recommended to me in the town that I'm in. I'd way rather support them than someone else.
I love that. What's the best trip or what's the most memorable coffee experience you've had on? It can be a golf trip or not a golf trip, but the best sort of little microculture of coffee that you've found.
Oh man. That's a good question. I think, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just because I've been spending so much time there, but I think there's a lot of really exciting things happening in North Carolina and South Carolina, actually. Methodical, that's down in, is it Greensville, I think, is a great roaster. I just saw when I was in Charlotte a couple of weeks ago that I think Not Just Coffee is merging, or they're doing a new project with someone else, I'm forgetting, but they're creating a new roastery called Night Swim. Have you heard of that yet?
It's with Undercurrent. Yeah.
There you go. Okay. There's a company, another roaster in Charlotte called Hex that I really like. And then like Joe Van Gogh out of the Raleigh area. I tend to find I'll visit all these places, buy like a bunch of bags, and then usually like make coffee in my room or something before we go play golf. But I think the closest like actual like golf or coffee at a golf course, the best thing has been since we launched our Nitro cold brew cans just last September. So it was a little bit right before it cooled down. But it's amazing going and playing someplace like Tobacco Road and being able to walk in and actually, buy a can of my own Nitro cold brew right there at the snack bar, or, see them out on display at Pinehurst or Dormy Club and all these places that like I just absolutely adore from a golf side. So it's fun to see our products have a presence there as well.
That's really, really neat.
Yeah. And it's all, I joke, but there's definitely some truth to the whole kind of, back end plan of this business was just to get to go and play more fun golf courses. And it's always great when like we'll schedule a meeting somewhere, and then like at the end of the meeting they're like, what are you guys doing? You want to go grab a cart, just go play nine? And it's like, yeah, absolutely. Selling coffee is good, but getting to play golf makes it perfect. So
fantastic. All right, Chris, we've got five quick hit questions for you, and then we'll get you out of here. You don't have to answer them too quickly. You can get detailed if you would like. Okay. But five shorter sort of questions. So for first question, if you can only have one in the morning, would you go decaf or caffeine pills? No caffeinated coffee.
Wow. I'd go decaf because, even decaf coffee has a little bit of caffeine in it. So I don't, caffeine pills I couldn't do.
I always say the same thing to people that people think that I'm just addicted to caffeine being a coffee guy. I'm like, no, I'm addicted to coffee, not caffeine.
Yeah, exactly.
So decaf would be the better option in my mind as well.
There you go.
Okay. Second question, meticulous description of the daily coffee routine.
Okay. You can tell I can be meticulous about answering questions. So there's a weekday and a weekend difference. The weekday is a little bit more boring because I just use a drip machine, although you got to make sure if you're going to do it, you get a SCA Gold Cup certified drip machine. On the weekends, I do pour overs. I love pour overs. So we've got a V60 at home that's kind of my go-to. I use water at 201 degrees, between 201 and 205, typically, depending on the bean. Have a kind of a single dose grinder that I've got some nice burrs on that I'll, you know, try and kind of dial in the coarseness. But once I have it set, like, you know, I'll go through whatever beans I'm making, grind up. I think it's about, I usually for my thing, it's, I think it's like 35 grams of coffee, 34 grams of grounds. And then I'm a big fan of Fellow kettles. We've got an Ode at the office. They just make great products. So I love my Fellow kettle. It's easy pouring, you know, keeps the temperature where it needs to be. And then I just kind of zone in and I'll do my pour over, however, 3-4, you know, 30 second pours. And it's kind of a nice little ritual. I wish I could do that more during the week. I'm usually, I've got two kids to get off to school. So I'm usually running around a little bit more, but that's how I like to make it when I can.
Okay. So side question there along one of your answers, you said 201 to 205 degrees based on the bean. What qualities are you looking for in the beans to make the decision around what temperature you're going to use?
I by playing around with it and seeing if the tastes, like what kind of flavors come out at higher or lower temperature. You know, I think there is, I forget what the technical, it's, you know, lighter beans, I think you typically go a little higher, and darker, you can go lower, just because there's already usually some kind of overwhelming flavors that can come out of the darker roast that you want to try and avoid. But for me, you know, I kind of am meticulous about kind of amounts, whether it's, you know, the weight of the beans, the, you know, milligrams of water I'm using, but the other things like temperature and kind of how long I'm pouring, I like to play around with and just see, you know, are there flavors that are coming out that I didn't notice before if I've changed one of those variables?
Okay. Favorite three golf courses and favorite three roasters that are not Good Walk, if you would be so kind.
Sure. I have to go with Oakland Hills South Course. These aren't going to be in order though, so I'll just have, these are my top three, not necessarily in order. Gosh, I loved Myopia Hunt Club. Got to play there last year. Just the vibe, the history, and then the course itself is everything like I want in a day of golf. So that'd be in there. I'm going to go Old Town too, just because, you know, again, when you kind of combine the course and the overall vibe of, you know, the hang there, great food, great people, really fun course. So I'm going to go those three. Roasters, big fan of Panther out of Miami. I'm not sure if you've tried them. They have some really, really fantastic coffees, and it's very consistent too. Like, really happy every time I get something from them. I'll go Methodical in South Carolina as well, I think is another, like, you know, has some really, really nice beans they get, and they always do a great job roasting them. Gosh, a third one, say Verve. You know, out here on the West Coast. So, you know, Verve out of, where am I blanking in the name?
It's, Santa Cruz.
Santa Cruz. There you go. There's too many Santa somethings out here. So, but yeah, out of Santa Cruz, I think they're you know, they do a really nice job as well.
Awesome. Okay. Bucket list day with coffee, golf, and food.
Oh man.
One course, few cups of coffee, few meals.
Yeah. Well, I've never played Pine Valley, so I'd maybe go like a little Pine Valley during the day and then hit Philadelphia for dinner and coffee. You know, I haven't spent a ton of time, you know, at smaller roasters in Philadelphia. I know it's kind of the headquarters of La Colombe, and they've, you know, kind of blown open the whole cold brew industry. So I'd have to give them some props for clearing the headwinds on that side. But yeah, that, or, you know, if there's not some kind of, you know, time and traffic barrier, then obviously, you know, Long Island and New York City would be a pretty sweet combo as well. I think you could achieve all three, you know, let's go either National Golf Links or Shinnecock and then head into New York and take our pick of restaurant and coffee.
Yeah, you can't really lose with either of those. There are a lot of good options there.
Yeah. And that's, and I wish I had played more golf up around San Francisco, but I just haven't for whatever reason. Otherwise, you know, that'd probably be another option as well.
Well, next time you're up this way, we'll work on that. We can do some fun stuff up there.
There you go.
All right. Last question of the day. If you started over tomorrow with Good Walk, what would you do differently?
Wow. That's a great question because, you know, so much of a startup is like constant change. And, you know, I mean, I know, again, kind of the buzzword of pivoting. I don't think that we've necessarily changed what we do, but we've certainly added, altered things along the way. You know, I think someone told me early on that it might have made much difference, but might have had us focus on different things. But, you know, there was a lot of focus on direct to consumer over the last probably like 10 years. And you see everything from Dollar Shave Club to, you know, coffee and everyone else who's selling online. But, you know, I think that one of the things that we've found over the last year is just omni-channel is so much more important these days to actually growing a business. And that's not just talking about coffee or necessarily in the golf space. But I think that, you know, the days of someone just launching a company solely sold online, direct to consumer, might be over. You know, people now are expecting to be able to find your products at multiple places, you know, multiple channels. So it'd probably just be to, you know, have more of our eye on kind of omni-channel early on.
Chris, we appreciate you coming on today. A lot of fun talking about coffee, talking about golf. I know I certainly enjoyed this episode. I think we have a lot of listeners who certainly are into golf, but coffee as well. So I'm excited to get this one out to everybody and hear the feedback.
Yeah, I did want to, I wanted to throw out there too. We've set up a discount code, the tie, all one word, for 20% off. And we'll just leave it open and leave it running. And hopefully, you know, all of your coffee loving listeners can try out a bag of Good Walk coffee with a little bit of a discount attached to it.